ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Thank you for all coming on this rainy day. Generally, people don't like to get out and about on rainy days. And thank you to Shikhi Mahiti Prabhu and the other devotees here for kindly inviting me and welcoming me here. And thank you to Shikhi Mahiti Prabhu especially for being here and injecting your enthusiasm and dedication into Krishna's service in this sacred city of Philadelphia. Sacred, Prabhupada came here. Krishna's here. In this way the whole world can become a tirtha by the chanting of the holy names, which is the subject of this evening's talk. I've been talking on and off, here and there, on Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, the thousand names of Vishnu. All names are complete in the name Krishna. But we can also go through Vishnu Sahasranam, which gives a thousand names of Vishnu, which from different aspects, from different angles, we can appreciate by through these names the various attributes by which Krishna is definitively and unquestionably the Supreme Personality of Godhead, especially his attributes of opulence. So usually after speaking on some of the names, I afterward get some more ideas, so I'll just go back first of all to ones I spoke on, and also some other things which to include. So before starting on verse 36, I'll just go back to what I just spoke on previously. Three of the names. Now, Adhishthana, which means the residence or the place in which everything rests. This means that Krishna is the substratum of everything. He's the substratum of the universe. Everything rests on him. And within him, he upholds everything. Everything is within him. And also, as residence, he is personally his residences, such as Mathura. He is non-different from those places. So that's some more thoughts about Adhishtana. Apramatta. This Srila Prabhupada always translates as not insane, or in other words, sane. But other acharyas, in this name, as it appears in Vishnu Sahasranam, they've also given the meaning that he never makes a wrong decision. Which means he also makes decisions. Krishna also makes decisions. He's not just some aloof entity or aloof force, but he makes decisions. I mean, he thinks what to do, and then he does it. But his decisions are always right, even if we think from our perspective that he must have done something wrong. Many people who are raised to believe in God, we've seen throughout history that people lose their faith in God when they see something bad happening in the world. What they don't realize is that Krishna himself has already stated in Bhagavad Gita that this world by nature is not a pleasant place. It is dukhalayam ashashvatam. It is a place of misery where everything is temporary. But people who are on a level of very primary God consciousness with severe misunderstandings, it means they've never been trained in Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. They think that God is good, so he should make everything good for me and for everyone else. And good means that we have all facility to enjoy sense gratification and nothing wrong should happen. He's our Father, so God the Father, he should arrange all facilities for sense gratification. This is the attitude of a spoiled brat. It's not an attitude of love for Krishna, love of God. So, even if we see things which are very bad or the cause of much suffering, we should understand God is good. He's doing this for a reason. His kind hand is there. He has kindly sent us tsunamis, tornadoes, and earthquakes, and so many forms of suffering. What is the reason? Well, that he knows, to help us remember him, to teach us that we're not meant for a sinful life. What is the ultimate cause of suffering in this world? Purusha sukha dukkhanam bhuktritve hetu ruchate. We ourselves, by our sinful and pious activities, are the cause of our distress and whatever little happiness there is in the world. So he never makes a wrong decision. He's not crazy. What is this God? He's making earthquakes and financial collapse. And what is it? What is this God? He's a crazy guy. No, he's perfectly sane. It's us who are crazy. His decisions are never wrong. Baladev Vidyabhushan, he translates this name, apramata, to mean he who carefully looks after the Vrajavasis. Then another name, Pratishtita, which means established, means firmly fixed. There are several names like this in Vishnu Sahasranam. And it also means one who is well respected. So we find in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warns aspiring Vaishnavas about the desire for pratishta, labh, puja, pratishta, profit, adoration, and being respected. So he warns against this. But Krishna, his prestige that is described by Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakura is Vaishnavi Pratishtha, that is the prestige connected with Vishnu, that is proper. That is not a matter of false ego. When Krishna says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavaha, everything comes from me. Mataparataram Nanyat, Kinchid Asti Dhananja, there's nothing and no one greater than me, even slightly. If anyone else but Krishna says that, then they are pramatta, they are crazy, and extremely egoistic. But when Krishna says that, he's just stating a fact, that's all. He is supreme. So that is his egoism, but it's not false egoism. It's correct. It's correct for Krishna to say so. Krishna is established in his own glory. He's established by himself. We hear people saying, I'm a self-made person. But Krishna, he is just like that. He is eternally supreme. There's no cause for him becoming great. It's not that he was raised in a poor family, but he did a lot of yoga and then he became God. But he is always, there's no question of him ever coming to the position of the Supreme Personality. He's always established in that position. Nor is there any question of him being dragged down. That, okay, Krishna, you've been God for long enough. We're fed up. We want someone else. Well, there are people who think like that. There are many imitation gods. India's one of India's great contributions to the world is a proliferation of bogus gods. But the actual established personality of Godhead is Krishna. And although others may fool foolish people by their claims to be supreme, it's all bogus. Krishna is actually established and always will be. All these so-called great people, they come and they go. They may appear to be very solidly fixed in their position, but it's just temporary. Big, powerful leaders, big, powerful countries. The United States of America, big, powerful country, won't remain so forever. It may seem like that, but the history of the world is that of some person or some country becomes very big and then it collapses. But Krishna's not like that. He's always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That he's respected, that Baladev Vidyabhushan, he also gives the meaning of this, that among all the cowherd boys in Vrindavan, Krishna is respected because he's the son of Nanda Baba, he's the big shot in Vrindavan. Please take this away from your feet, yeah? So, going on to verse 36, and name 329 Skanda. This is a name of the... Well, the name Skanda is well known as the name of the demigod, otherwise known as Kartikeya Subramanyam Guha in Tamil, in Tamil Nadu, the worship of him is most prominent, known as Murugan or Shanmugan, which is from the Sanskrit, Shanmukha, who has six heads, and many names like that. But all the names of the demigods, they're borrowed names from Krishna. Just like Indra means king. Who is the real king? Krishna. Shiva means auspicious. Who is most auspicious? Krishna. So the name Skanda literally means... Well, there are several meanings. The one that is closest to the name Skanda, who is the commander-in-chief of the forces of the demigods for destroying the demons, was begotten by Shiva and Parvati for that purpose. So the closest meaning is that of attacker, one who attacks. In Bhagavad Gita, in describing his vibhutis, his opulences as manifested in this world, Krishna says, Senani namaham skandaha. Among the soldiers, I am Skanda. So he who attacks, literally it can mean he who dries up. In other words, he who destroys, he dries up the enemy, takes all the juice out of them. Another meaning is one who jumps or hops like a grasshopper. So we could use our imagination to think, well, everything comes from Krishna. Another meaning is effusion. He is an effusion of bliss, of bhakti, of love for his devotees. Another dictionary meaning is he who is the worshipable god of thieves. So everyone can worship Krishna, although stealing is not generally recommended. He dries up and destroys. Well, Krishna is very much seen as an attacker and a destroyer of all the demons, and he comes to this world. That's one of the stated purposes of Krishna for coming to this world. Vinashaya tadushkritam. He comes to this world to destroy the wicked. Ete changsha kalapungsa krishnastu bhagavan swayam indrari vyakalam lokam hridayanti yuge yuge. Bhagavatam describes that all the forms of the Lord, among whom Krishna is the original form, they appear in various ages for the sake of subduing those who are enemies of Indra and enemies of the demigods. Another meaning, because the Sanskrit words can be, those who are expert, they can draw various meanings by looking at various roots. Different acharyas are given the meaning that skanda can mean one who melts like butter when it comes to helping his devotee. Although he's a powerful attacker who destroys the demons, he can kill huge and powerful armies of the demons, his heart is also soft like butter, and he's very much inclined to helping his devotees who are struggling. And another thought is that he destroys the armies of the demons, many, many demons he can kill, any number. So in the same way, his devotees, those who are aspiring to be devotees, they may have many, many demon-like desires and bad thoughts within their mind, but Krishna can destroy them all. Another similar meaning, he flows like nectar. His thoughts are like nectar in thinking of his devotees. So, and that also, senani namaham skandaha. That skanda, Subramanya, Kartikeya, he represents the glory of Krishna. That the vibhuti means the some glory. So particularly the leader of an army, successful army, is glorious in this world. That the head of the demigods, none of the demigods were capable of defeating the demons, but Kartikeya did so, and in this way he symbolizes the glory of Krishna. And of course, he's also able to do so because he receives strength from Krishna, and that is that we understand from the next name, name 330, Skanda Dhara. Means Dhara means to hold, to support. So the power and glory of Skanda, the demigod, that all rests on the power and glory that is invested in him by Krishna. As we see also, for instance, in the case of Arjuna, who was so powerful that he could defeat all enemies, but later, after Krishna left, then Arjuna felt himself powerless. He understood that my power that is invested in me by Krishna, and Krishna can withdraw it. Krishna is balam balavatam chaham. He is the strength of the strong. Krishna, he withers up, dries up, or destroys the demons, and he also invests strength in the demigod Skanda. So, another meaning of Skanda, given by Shankaracharya, who's also made a commentary on Vishnu Sahasranam, is a dharma. So in this sense, Skanda Dhara, name 330, means he who upholds the path of dharma. So this is a very important consideration. Again, we find in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he is comes to this world to uphold dharma. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanya bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamayaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya tadushkritam dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. In every age, Krishna appears whenever there is a decline in dharma and an increase in adharma. Krishna appears, he uplifts the devotees and destroys the demoniac, re-establishes the principles of dharma. But I won't get into it, it's a very important topic, but I won't discuss it more now because similar names appear within Vishnu Sahasranam. So this has already been discussed. So another name, name 331, Dhuryaha, which means the support or the supporter. One of the meanings for the word dhur is load. So he bears the weight. So literally, he bore the weight of the Mandara hill as Kurma. Yeah, we can't imagine how he how the Supreme Lord appears in the form of a tortoise. Do you get tortoises wandering around in this area? I was just in North Carolina, and I saw one. We were crossing the street. I thought maybe that's an escaped pet tortoise, but I was told that they're just normal around here. And the devotee, as we drove in such a way that the two wheels went in such a way that we didn't kill the tortoise, but I was told that the pious, God-fearing people around there, they're mostly all Christians in the south, in the country especially. When they see a tortoise on the road, it's a sport for them to drive their car over them to kill them. So nasty, huh? So nasty. So he appears in that form, and he supports the huge mountain. And for him, it's very pleasant. It's just like someone may have their back massaged, and there's some pressure is there, but that relieves the that pressure when someone is giving a heavy massage. That relieves the tension. So similarly, the tension in the muscles of the back. So similarly, Kurumadev, the Supreme Lord, in the form appearing as the Keshava Dhritta Kurama Sharira Jai Jagadishahare, appearing in the form of a tortoise, felt that this massive weight, which would crush anyone else, was nicely scratching his back. So he supported the Mandara mountain. And of course, he's the support of everything. Dhata in Bhagavad Gita, he says. Pita hamasya jagata, mata dhata pita maha. He says, I am the mother and the father of the universe. And the support and the grandfather of the universe. So quite easy to understand that must be a quality of the Supreme Lord, that he is supporting everything. The scientists are very busy trying to find out some mathematical formula which will explain how everything in the universe is going on, but they needn't waste their time. They can just tell that there's a two-worded syllable which is their theory, which holds all the formulae together, and that word is Krishna. So they can save stretching their brains and doing their research. Instead of spending billions of dollars on research, they can just take one Bhagavad Gita as it is, and they'll get all the answers. But they won't, because they're like that. Just by studying Bhagavad Gita as it is, we can understand more than all the big scientists. What is the origin of the universe? Krishna. What is the support of the universe? Krishna. And what happens when it's all over? It all enters into Krishna. But they will spend their billions of dollars. So Krishna is the support of everything. And this name has also come up in various ways. Another meaning is a dhur. This is one acharya has given an alternative meaning. Dhur means the front part of anything. So he interprets this to mean that one who is at the front of everything and everyone, and who shows the way for shows the way to everyone. Another meaning, one who brings into being the creation perfectly without any mistake. So again, our scientists, they won't believe. But how is the perfection of the perfection of the universe so perfectly created? That is by Krishna. Name 332 is a fairly well-known name, especially by persons in the Sri Sampradaya, Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. Varada. Well-known in the Sri Sampradaya because there's a famous temple, one of the most important temples in the Sri Sampradaya at Kanchipuram of Varada Raja. So Vara means a boon. Just boon means something which is offered to someone, just take it. You something given out of someone who is rich or can give something, you just take it, and as just out of his good nature. He sees someone, he's satisfied with them, and he gives them. Of course, sometimes the Lord gives power and opulence even to demoniac people. But that is done through his external energy. Vara means a boon, and Varada means the giver of boons. So Krishna, he is Varada Raja, or as Prahlad Maharaj described him, Varadeshwara, the Supreme Lord who is the giver of boons in the temple of Varadaraj of in Kanchi in South India. The Lord is in this position, means this is the mudra or the pose for giving, holding out the right hand like this, for giving. This is the pose which means to give blessing or to offer a boon. So on his hand is written in Tamil, Ma Shuchaha from Bhagavad Gita. Savadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam braja ahang tva sarva pabhebhyo moksha yishami ma shuchaha. Krishna says, in what is known in the Sri Sampradaya as the Charam Shloka, the best or the highest of all the verses. He says, Krishna says, abandon all varieties of dharma, of religion, and just take shelter in me, surrender unto me. I will deliver you from all sinful reactions, do not fear. So this giving fearlessness, abhayadhan, the giving of fearlessness, this is understood to be the greatest benediction, the greatest boon that the Supreme Lord gives. There are many things we can ask him for, but any material boon that we receive from him, such as dhan, jan, sundari, wealth, followers and popularity, beautiful woman, that simply prolongs our existence in this material world. This material world is the world of fear. We must be fearful because we are without the natural shelter of Krishna. Without that shelter, we come to the world of birth and death. We come to the world where everyone is in competition, not in cooperation. Everyone is in competition, trying to exploit the situation of this material world for their sense gratification, which means to control others, engage them in one's service and to try to avoid being engaged by others. It's basically a nasty place. Bhayam dutiyad vinivesata syat ishadape tasya viparya smritihi. This world is described as the world of fear. It's not our actual position, it's a duplicate position. We become absorbed in a wrong kind of consciousness due to our neglecting the Supreme Lord. Our consciousness becomes opposite to what it should be. So this is the world of fearfulness, and Krishna offers the benediction of fearlessness. But there's some condition that we have to consciously take shelter of Him. We can't have His protection and be independent of Him at the same time. It doesn't work. It's not possible. There are certain terms and conditions. If we reject Krishna and want to enjoy separately from Krishna, then we can't also be sheltered by Him. We're in a different consciousness where we don't want to be with Krishna. So Krishna gives us fearlessness, relief from this material world, by speaking Bhagavad Gita, the conclusion of which is, come to the fearless position. Arjuna was fearful that he wasn't afraid of the fighting, but he was afraid of committing sin. But Krishna assured him that if you just follow me and do what I say, you will be freed from all sin. There's no question of, if you act on my order, there's no question of being affected by any sinful reaction. So this is Krishna's best benediction. And if we want other things from him, he can give whatever he likes. If we want material gains from him, he can give us. But as the best of the givers of benedictions, of boons, then he's not very much inclined to give material boons. Therefore, there are demigods who do that on behalf of him. We can also go to Krishna for material boons, but generally, materialistic people, they're attracted to worship of demigods because they get from them. Kangshanta karmanang siddhim yajante hadevataha kshipram hi bhavati loke siddhim bhavati karmaja. By performing the, following the path of karma kanda, pious activities, worshipping the demigods, people who desire what they consider to be perfection in this material existence, they worship demigods and they get quickly what they desire. But the effect of getting what they desire is that again they have to die, again they have to suffer. They never get actual happiness. So we see that Krishna, he is very much inclined to give boons to his devotees. There's Sudama, well-known Sudama. He went to visit Krishna on the behest of his wife to get some wealth. He didn't want wealth. He was already rich with love of Krishna. But his wife wanted it, so even though Sudama didn't ask, he gave. Sudama gave him some broken rice which isn't fit to give anyone. Or rather, he brought it, but he didn't want to give it, but Krishna took it anyway. that just Krishna took it. Why did Krishna take it? Not that he particularly wanted that food, but he wanted to take something from his devotee, some offering of love. And in exchange, well, not really in exchange, but in exchange for the love that Sudama expressed, pure love for him, then Krishna gave him, all right, your wife wants that, then you take it. And for Sudama, is no difference. Before having wealth and after having wealth, his thought was completely absorbed in Krishna. He wasn't at all swayed or distracted from his worship of Krishna by that wealth. There's another Sudama in Mathura. When Krishna entered Mathura, there was a florist. And when he saw Krishna and Balaram, he offered them beautiful garlands. So Krishna, he told this Sudama that you will live very nicely as long as you're in this material world, and then you will enjoy the boon of eternal life in the spiritual world. So if we can offer with love to Krishna some simple thing, some flower, Krishna will be very satisfied. In fact, that well-known verse, Patrang Pushpang Palang Taryam Yome Bhaktya Prayachati Tadahang Bhaktyupaharitam Ashnami Prayatatmanaha. That of course appears in Bhagavad Gita, but the same verse, we find that Krishna spoke that to Sudama in Dwaraka, that when Krishna took that broken rice from him, he said this verse also. If anyone offers me love and devotion, leaf, flower, fruit or water, I will accept it. So in this case, Krishna didn't just accept it, he took it practically by force. He wanted to take that offering of love. So Krishna is always, he's superior to us. That we should understand. But he's superior means that he's not a crushing despot, but he's very kind. And he always looks to his subordinates. How can they be benefited? And he's always ready to give them whatever they need. That is the difference between Krishna and the demigods. Krishna, he tends to give people what they need. And the demigods tend to give people what they want. And there's usually a difference. We don't know what we need, and therefore we want not only that which we do not need, but that which is detrimental to us. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur coined a phrase, apaswartha parayana, which means being very much attached to that which is against our self-interest. Isn't that madness? You very, very much want something which is very bad for you. That is the position in the material world. So Krishna, he is Varada, he gives that which we need, but it may not be that which we immediately like. So sometimes people say, don't worship Krishna. If you want to worship Krishna, you worship him at the end of life. If you want moksha, you can worship Krishna, but don't worship him now. Now you worship Shiva and enjoy this world, and later you worship Krishna. So, but this kind of religiously trying to trick God and have your cake and eat it program, it doesn't work. One cannot develop pure love for Krishna by trying to outmaneuver him. One has to surrender to him. So another name, 333, which brings me almost to the one-third point, is Vayu Vahana. Vayu means air, and Vahana means the carrier of. Or it can also mean who has Vayu, air, to carry him. So it can mean either way. Madhvacharya, he lays great stress on Vayu, the demigod of air. He, of course, according to Bhagavad Gita, he recognizes Vishnu, Krishna, as Purushottama, the supreme person among all persons. That is particularly the subject of the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Purushottama Yoga. Yomameva samudho janati purushottamam sa sarvavid bhajatimam sarva bhavena bharata. Krishna summarizes this chapter by saying that one who recognizes me, one who knows me, without doubting to be the supreme person among all persons. Such a person knows everything and worships me in all respects. So, Madhvacharya, he recognizes that there is Purushottama, the supreme among all living beings, Krishna, and Vayu, he establishes on the basis of Shastra as Jivottama, the best of the living beings, the best devotee. So, Vayu is very important in the Madhva Siddhanta, The wind blows everywhere, everything exists in the wind, but the support or the substratum of that is Krishna. So this name came previously, Atishtanam, the substratum. So he's the substratum of everything. Everything exists in the air. And Vayu also, the demigod Vayu, he also, as Madhvacharya, brings Krishna to the attention of the people. He is the Krishna is the source of life for all living beings. So air is essential for life. Without air, we cannot live for more than a few seconds. So Krishna, he is the he brings that air, or he provides that air. another name of Krishna is prana, which means the life breath, so that's similar. He is the life breath of this world. Shankaracharya, he gives the meaning of this name that Bhagavan, Krishna, controls the atmosphere in the seven regions of space. And then Radha Krishna Shastri, another commentator, describes these seven regions which are controlled by the seven sons of Kashyap and Diti, who are called the Sapta Maruta. Maruta is another name for air or wind. So the regions, in space. The according to Vedic understanding, the air is everywhere throughout the universe. There are different kinds of air. The term air may not correspond exactly to the understanding of air as in modern science. So there are these different regions, there are different airs within them, the regions of the universe. There's the space between the earth and the clouds, that between the clouds and the sun, the space between the sun and the moon, the space between the moon and the stars, the space between the stars and the planets, the regular planets up to the heavenly planets, and beyond that there are the planets of the great rishis, the great sages. So there's another kind of air between that. And Krishna, he controls the air, he oversees everything. According to the Vedic understanding, which we accept as factual, that it's because of these kinds of air that controls all the different objects in space, not as is thought by modern scientists, that it's gravity and then everything is moving, just continuing motion since the Big Bang. A lot of problems with gravitational theory. They didn't find enough mass in the universe, so they had to invent dark matter, 96% of the universe. We can't see it, touch it, taste it, smell it, feel it, or anything it, but it must be there, because without that, our theory of gravity falls to pieces. Seems like a very strange science. Okay, I'll finish there. Any questions about this? There are different kinds of air within the body also, yeah. Would it be the same as the air out there? Well, presumably it's different, but I don't know enough about this technical subject to answer. Same in the sense that there are different kinds of air. So it's all air, but there are different kinds of air within the body and outside the body. Would it seem to be different? The air that moves the planets, it's certainly at least different in the sense of being different in scale to the air that moves things within our body. But that would require some... To answer that to your satisfaction would require some research. There's lots of research required into many, many subjects. Vedic science, much research is required. Much of that knowledge was lost or destroyed. Yeah, anything else? But for us, anyway, we don't need to... For most people, we don't need to know all the technical details. We simply need to know that Krishna is the root of everything. Krishna maintains and sustains everything. And ultimately, Krishna destroys everything. So for most people, technical knowledge is not required. That may be for a few specialists. Yes, please. Hare Krishna.
Sometimes you mentioned, sometimes we hear that Shiva is the greatest devotee, or Narada Muni is the greatest devotee, and sometimes Vaidya is the greatest devotee. And how should we...
Who is the greatest devotee? Well, it matters who you ask.
Yeah.
It's just like we hear about Jayananda, Srila Prabhupada's dear devotee. He would, every time he took prasad, he would say, "This is the best prasad I've ever had." And he'd mean it every time. And he'd say to all the devotees, "Oh, you're the greatest devotee." And he'd mean it. So one's thought at a particular time, maybe think of Lord Shiva, "Oh, such a great devotee. Always acting for the benefit of all living beings. Oh, greatest devotee." Then some other time our meditation may go to Prahlad. And in this way we may say, "Oh, greatest devotee, greatest devotee." That is elaborately dealt with in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where the conclusion is that the Vrajavasis are the greatest devotees. If we want to examine in a technical way, but among the followers of Lord Ram, then Hanuman is the greatest devotee, Lakshman is the greatest devotee, Sita is the greatest. Even then, you can't be exactly sure. So they're all together, Sita, Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman. Who's to say? All the love of all these great devotees is infinite. So who's going to say which infinite love is more than another infinite love? Who's got the most infinity? It is possible to have more infinity than another set of infinity. Infinite can be, one set of infinite numbers can be more than another set. For instance, if we say, okay, numbers 1, add 3, go to 4, okay, and add another 3, go to 7, and add another 3, go to 10, and like this, you add, starting from 1, you add 3, and you go on infinitely. So there are an infinite number of numbers. But then if you take the numbers in between, you can also have an infinite set of numbers, but it's twice as much, because you have 2, 3, 5, 6. So, well, that's the kind of thing that philosophers might argue over. Is it more or is it less? But possibly, it seems to be, it should be more. However far, if you go to the same number, if you calculate the same number of sets, then you're going to find in the numbers in between, you have double, even though they're both infinite. Anyway, it's the kind of thing that philosophers talk about. But better they just talk about Krishna, rather than getting their mind all washed up like this. So who's the supreme? Lord Shiva's the best bhakti, says in Srimad Bhagavatam. There you go. And if you go to Ram bhaktas, they say Hanuman's the best. And then someone may say in Vaikuntha, they may say Lakshmi is best. Here comes Vishnu on Garuda. Garuda's the best. When things are beyond our ability to measure, then what can we say? We say they're all the best. None of them are lacking. Anything else? Overcome anxiety. How can we overcome anxiety? Don't have a cell phone. That's a good start. And as I think 4 times already, cell phones went off. You could kindly turn them off, and then I'll be in less anxiety. How to get free of anxiety, that was discussed. Ma shuchaha, do not fear. Take shelter of Krishna, then there's no anxiety. That's the answer. You're not satisfied with the answer. Sorry. That's what Krishna says. I can't say anything more than I don't know anything beyond that. You can try taking a pill if you want. There are plenty of people who take pills to get free from anxiety, but it's not as good a formula as Krishna's. Take shelter of me, Krishna says. I will deliver you from all fear. So that's your answer. Yes, please. How do we develop that faith and conviction? It's a commonly asked question. How do we advance in devotion? Well, earlier this day, I was listening to a lecture by Srila Prabhupada, where after the lecture, he was asked a similar question. How do we develop enthusiasm and sincerity in devotional service? And Srila Prabhupada gave the example that if you associate with drunkards, then gradually you'll become like them, you'll become a big drunkard. So the point he made was that you associate with devotees, then gradually you also become an advanced devotee. So all these kind of questions, how can I be sincere, how can I be humble, how can I be determined? One generic reply to all of them is associate with those devotees who have those qualities, and sangat sanjayate kamaha. By association one's desire develops. Hare Krishna. There's another question here. Yeah, those who worship demigods, they get the result faster. But they also get the result of punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. They also get the result of repeated birth and death. So what's the use? Antavattu palang teisham tad bhavat yalpamedasa. They get a result, but it doesn't last very long. So they're not very intelligent. If you want to worship demigods, you can. We're not saying you can't, but it's not very intelligent to do so.
My question is, where you mentioned the Shastra that the worship of demigods doesn't get the fastest, and secondly,
where is it mentioned in Shastra that demigod worship of demigods, they get results quickly? I just quoted that from Bhagavad Gita. That I'll quote it again. Kangshanta karmanang siddhim yajanta iha devataha. Kshiprang hi manushe loke siddhir bhavati karmaja. In the path of karma kanda, by worshipping demigods, one quickly gets results. You quickly get it, but you quickly lose it also. So, Hare Krishna, we'll finish there.